Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, a podcast from Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. This is season four, and today we're very happy to welcome a special guest, Charlie Ashby from Imperial Senate Podcast, who's going to be talking some Star Wars with us and some Now and Then, the last new Beatles song. I can't believe those words just came out of my mouth in 2023. But anyway, welcome, Charlie, to the podcast.
Welcome, welcome, Charlie. Hey, how's it going? It goes, man. It goes. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm very happy to talk to you. I mean, obviously, we've kept in touch. We finally met in person back in Star Wars Celebration Europe in London earlier this year, and that was great. Yeah. As always, Celebration's a wonderful place to finally meet our internet friends and get to hug them in real life, and it was great to meet you there. So it's great to kind of see your face again, and like you know, it's not as if we haven't kept in touch. Obviously, we have, but you know, it's always nice to see each other. How you been doing, man?
Exactly. It's been it's been interesting. It's been an interesting few months. Obviously, I think if we went back in time and spoke to ourselves at Celebration, what did we expect? That we wouldn't be able to podcast or talk about things that we love about for months and months and months. Probably not, but it's nice to be in a place where we can now.
We can again, yes.
It's definitely been a roller coaster, 2023. It has had the highest highs and the lowest lows. It's if anyone had asked me like how this year was going to go, I would have had wildly different opinions depending on when you asked me. And definitely Celebration was the highlight of the year. And I was going to say, this year's going to be the best year in the history of humanity. And then the next month happened. And here we are. And here we are. But thankfully, we're alive. We're healthy. The strikes are over. We can finally talk about, all the media that's out there. And especially what we are going to talk about today, which obviously we would have been able to talk about regardless of the strike status. But before we get going on all that, Charlie, you haven't been on the show previously, unfortunately. We kind of wanted to make something happen for Ahsoka, but that obviously didn't happen, unfortunately, because of the strikes. So, you know, we're making it happen now. So tell us a little bit about yourself to like our audience. Tell us, you know, about you, about the Imperial Senate podcast, about what you like to talk about there. So yeah, give us the rundown on who Charlie is, who the Imperial Senate podcasts are.
I think to sum me up is to sum up the Imperial Senate podcast, really, which is that it's purely an excuse for me, our good friend Nikki Kumar, and Claire Stribling to be very stupid, very silly, and very raunchy about Star Wars and pretty much anything, to be honest. It started off as just an opportunity for me and Nikki to talk about Star Wars together. We met through podcast circles, and then that's how our friendship grew, and then we met Claire through there, and then ever since it's just been this crazy ride where you end up at Celebration meeting amazing people such as yourselves. And I mean, it's the best way to like meet friends, and it is purely an excuse to like just be stupid, which I feel like not many people appreciate that much. I feel like it gets lost a little bit in the sense of like there's ego involved, and
100%.
Yeah, I agree.
People like to, you know, be happy about the fact that they get all this amazing stuff, and that's great and awesome. But also, don't lose the fact that it's just a TV show, movie, series that we talk about.
Yeah, and sometimes it's good just to have fun.
Exactly. And to me, that point was highlighted the most in Celebration. We were like at the Novotel and kind of seeing the different vibes between different people. Obviously, we're not going to name names here. This is, you know, we name names in other places, not in this in this environment. But it was always, but it was extremely interesting to see like who was there for the silliness and for the camaraderie and for just you know, enjoying each other's company, and like who was not there for that. You know, I think we had a lot of fun. None of us were working. I mean, you did record for Imperial Senate with Nikki, but it was an unhinged episode from what, you know, from what we could appreciate after it came out. So what did you, tell us a little bit more about like your London experience for Celebration, because I know you went to Anaheim at first. Well, not, I don't know at first, but like I know you were at Anaheim. how was that experience for you there? Because you have been to a couple of celebrations too, including the previous Celebration Europe. So tell me a little bit about that evolution, so to speak, of like being Celebration Europe and then coming to having a huge block of celebrations in the US and then finally returning to London. What was that for you? Were you podcasting that first time?
Yeah.
And you went to Celebration?
So when I first, so I'm from London. I'm a born Londoner. So for me, it means a lot. Even though I moved when I was 9, I still consider it home because it is. Like, my family have been there. Go back a while back. So, yeah, it's home for me. And obviously, a lot of Star Wars comes from London. It's a very English production, that original film especially. So there's a lot of Star Wars in London specifically as well. So I feel like it's a natural home for when everyone comes over.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, yeah, like, the first time, the 2016 one was my first Celebration ever. So, and I originally bought like one ticket for one day, and I was like, I'm gonna try it out, and ended up buying like the entire weekend because I was like, I have to go, blah blah blah. I'm so glad I did. It was the first time I got to meet Nikki in person, which was great. We'd met each other through like another podcast that we used to listen to together. I don't now. that ego thing. But yeah, we met through that. Became friends online, had a lot in common. He actually lived in London at the time when we recorded, which makes it funny. So he was over here, but we just couldn't obviously meet at the same time because I was at uni, he was doing other uni work. So it was nice to get together, meet each other, and that sort of kickstarted the fact that we wanted to do like something together. So that actually was the reason why Imperial Senate podcast was founded, really. That was where it all kind of started. And then, yeah, I've been able to go on adventures through that. I have an anxiety disorder. So for me, like, going to my first celebration abroad was a big deal because it meant going on a plane by myself. And every time I go, it's like a next step sort of thing. And I'm sort of proud of the fact that I get to the point now where, like you said, we get to hang out at bars and chill out with, you know, the creme de la creme of Star Wars fandom.
Our group was the best group, hands down. There's not even an argument.
We went over, we broke hearts, I think. We won over people.
Yes.
I think we got someone fired, technically.
Well, she got herself fired. But it was great. Yeah. Hashtag where's Layla?
if you're watching this, we're thinking of you. Hope you're well.
We hope you're employed also. Yes.
Yes. But yeah, it's ever since that celebration was particularly a fond one for me because it was kind of like a full circle moment where everyone who I'd met ever since had come back to London, and it just felt very, very full circle. Obviously, the first celebration 2016 was just after Episode 7 came out, and I remember watching The Force Awakens in the cinema. And like everyone knew at that point, like, what was happening and what was going on. And like seeing like the Rey saber catch and stuff, and just seeing people excited and screaming was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And to get to the point where actually think about all the stuff that's happened in between, all the arguments and culture wars, fighting and bickering and blah 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 blah. Everyone hating each other and, you know, sadness and people losing people in real life. And then this celebration, we had Daisy Ridley back, announcing that she's returning. And it was like a big applause. It's like, it's just a full circle moment where you just remember, actually, a lot of this stuff is rubbish. Like, a lot of anger is noise. You got to turn the volume down a little bit.
Or mute, you know? The best tool that Twitter or X, whichever you prefer to call it nowadays, has given us is the mute button. It's like, and then you can just drown out all the superfluous stuff that's out there. Because I think Celebration, not just for the hijinks and the fun that ensues there, the great thing about it is kind of you put things back in perspective about what really matters because you know we kind of get hung up on these social media circles of, like you said, the egos and the fights and the bad takes and all those things. But then you go to Celebration and you realize that nothing, that stuff doesn't matter. It's just about
and that there's still a lot of love.
Exactly. It's about love. Yes.
It's the most humbling experience because it forcefully reminds you that you're actually just a child at heart. There's no way, no one can go to Celebration with, like, unless you're just so out of whack with the universe and you see a person dressed as an Ewok or a Jawa and not run into a kid and go, look, that's a Jawa. Like, if you don't do that, then what's the point?
Right.
Like, yeah.
Exactly. Nani, we got to get you into, like, one of these. I know you and I went to Orlando and that was a shit show, for lack of a better word.
We did not plan correctly.
Well, we didn't plan on purpose because we were like too cool for school.
Yeah, we thought we were too cool.
We're like, we're just going to show up and we're just going to get into those panels. And that didn't work. That did not work. we made no friends.
Nope.
We still had a blast, though.
We had a blast, yeah.
So I know. I need to get back to the
Tokyo, baby. Tokyo's where it's at. We're gonna go.
I graduate in May, so here's
You have the extra year, 2025. So there's some room for planning.
Little room there.
Yeah. We gotta get it post band to start, planning getting the numbers ready and like the organization of how it's gonna go. Because I think Tokyo's gonna. I mean, I might not end up going. I want to go, but I have a feeling if London was as wild as it was, like Tokyo's is gonna be like a different dimension. Because if you make it to Tokyo, you gotta like double down on the party, because that's gonna be a tough one for us, you know, on the western side of things to make. So if we get to that, it's gonna be crazy, I think. Anyway,
it's great as well, because I think it's always good to prepare, especially for celebrations, like the basics. If you've got the basics prepared, you're fine. You know, get your clothes sorted, get backup clothes for potential, you know, disasters or weather or whatever. You know, get your cleaning stuff, get your toothbrush, all that. That's good. It's good to prepare for the first day or two, and then it just goes off the rails anyway. So
Oh, please, I just need to go. It was such a good time. And at this point, it's interesting because I feel like I want to go to Celebration. Not for the panels or anything at this point. It's just like, it's just a get together
with the friends.
It's a big get together at that point. Like, all the panels are like a bonus now, which obviously I think to full disclosure is kind of a privileged thing for like some of us to say, because we do get into panels, but that's a separate story for a separate day. moving a little bit closer into like our topics, though, I wanted to ask you about your opinion. Obviously, finally, we can say that the strikes are over. WGA settled the strike a couple weeks ago, and finally this week, SAG-AFTRA settled the strike. Yeah. It still has to be ratified by voting members, but the strike is officially over, so we don't have to do disclaimers anymore, so that's great. Congratulations to the writers and actors on strike for getting the deal that they wanted, although I've been reading some stuff on some of the provisions on the AI segments that the SAG agreed to, and apparently they're still not the best, so we'll see what happens with that. But congratulations to all of them, and you know, that's well fought and prove that unions work, and we just need more unions, please, especially in architecture.
Who'd have thought
that, you know, working class fighting for their rights would work, you know. Thanks to Reagan and Thatcher for kind of breaking unions a little bit. But Charlie, what was your perspective of all of that across the pond, right? Because I think it must be a little different seeing that, you know, removed from being in that in the environment, right? Because I think the actors union in the UK was supporting the SAG after strikes. But how was the temperature over on your side of things, or what was happening here in the U.S. with everything? Was it like, don't know anything type of thing?
I was firmly pro Bob Iger. You know, that guy is a legend. all hell, the robot overlords who will replace our jobs. yeah, you're right. It was interesting. there's certain things obviously you couldn't do. There's like conventions were like strange. I haven't been to a convention for ages, but you know, sometimes you just like watch interviews and stuff. It was funny watching a David Tennant interview where the majority of the questions were just foundly about his life. Like, was it like going to the shops? Oh, it's fine. Like, it was so it's strange. Like, hearing his, like, he's getting paid for that, but you know, good for him. Yeah, like obviously, very pro union, pro people, you know, getting what they want. Very firmly against, like you said, certain figureheads that were against that, that you may have mentioned and may still be in charge of certain countries. Yeah, like it was just good to see people over here like support all the strikers. There was a moment, there was a thing in the middle of, it was the summer, when everyone came to support writers and everyone came to support the actors in Leicester Square, which is really cool. People like Brian Cox like speaking out, and when you've got Brian Cox like speaking out just anyway, it's always good to have, you know, good old Roy just shouting at people. But yeah, everyone was there, like Olivia Colman, I believe, was there, and just, you know, it's hard to fight against, I think, unless you just don't know anything about it. And I can get where people get, oh, but they're all millionaires. It's like, well, no, they're not. Not everyone's a millionaire. There are actors that
the vast majority are not.
Yeah,
very much so. So yeah, it was very strange, but good strange. I'm not going to complain too much about not being able to watch a Marvel movie sooner than I want to anyway.
Yeah. Right, because especially with the state of Marvel nowadays, where they kind of need to circle back and reevaluate like how they're pumping out all these shows and movies, which, you know, I mean, I saw the Marvels. I thought it was fine. It was a good movie. It was a lot of fun. But and Loki was good. We can talk about that some other day. But I don't know. Like, it feels like a little aimless right now. It feels like a little bit like Phase 2, where they kind of don't know. And obviously, I think the whole Jonathan Majors stuff is making them quake in their boots about how to proceed, even though it's just like, what's the problem with recasting? You recasted Terrence Howard and didn't bat an eyelash about that. It's just like, it's fucking, it's a multiverse. Yeah. Who cares?
Do what you can't recast. You can't recast main characters. People won't understand what's going on.
I guess.
I'm a big James Bond fan, and they've never done that in that series.
Right, never. Never recast.
It's still Sean Connery, as far as I'm aware.
Also, can I just say on topic, off topic, but people that think that it's not the same person just because they have a different face, what are you doing? Maybe that's why they're very apprehensive. I think we do forget how stupid the general public are. So I'll give Kevin Feige that one.
Quick question about James Bond. I know we're not talking about James Bond, but I need to know your opinion now. Obviously, I mean, this is not a spoiler at this point, but in No Time to Die, James Bond dies. So I'm curious, what do you think they're gonna do now with is it gonna be Bond 26? Is it the next one?
Yeah.
What do you think is gonna be the approach there? Do you think they're gonna Casino Royale him, or do you think they're just gonna
start it'd be a reboot,
complete reboot? But just because that's the thing, though. It's obviously Ian Fleming's stories, I think, are I don't think there's any more stories for them to adapt. The first Ian Fleming James Bond was Casino Royale, so obviously we already did that with Daniel Craig. So what do you think is going to be the approach before Casino Royale, or just like plop him in the middle of his career and just like, okay, whatever, this is an established Bond and let's just get on with it type of thing?
I think you need to do a story that is, you can't do Casino Royale again.
Yeah.
Because
especially so soon.
I mean, yeah, so soon, but I mean, it'll be nearly 20 years since the last one came out, since the original Casino Royale came out, in terms of the Daniel Craig one. So it would have been a while back. Yeah.
I think Goose had a minor stroke.
No, it hasn't. No, it hasn't. Please continue.
Well, next year it would be what? I think 20 years since it was announced that Daniel Craig was going to be Bond, I believe.
Stop. But let's change topics.
I think you broke Goose.
Well, if I want to really break your mind, I'll tell you, it's been 21 years since Dying of a Day.
I had that DVD. I was very into that movie when it came out. I was very into that movie when it came out, to my shame. To my everlasting shame.
It's fine. It's fine. It's not as bad as people make it out to be.
I don't know.
I'll stand here and say 3 out of 4 of the Brosnan era were pretty good films.
GoldenEye is still pop. Yeah. It's still so good.
GoldenEye's great.
GoldenEye.
Honestly, yeah.
Anyway.
The director of GoldenEye.
The Casino Royale. Yeah, he rebooted Bond successfully twice, which is like incredible. We should do a James Bond episode.
We should.
With you, obviously, Charlie. Because I'm getting excited.
You're getting good vibes. Yeah,
I'm getting the good vibes. But you know, okay, all these stuff, blah blah blah. But now strikes are over, and kind of as a gift from the not from the strikes, but from nature healing itself, was we got gifted a brand new song from a very old band that we never expected would be doing this in 2023. And I wasn't aware that they were going to do this. And for anyone that hasn't read the episode description, it's from the Beatles, obviously. And the Beatles released Now and Then, the final Beatles song. Last week, we were supposed to talk about it last week, scheduling snafus, whatever. We're here now, and that's what matters. Hey, what is time exactly? John Lennon's not here to talk about it, so at least one week late. It's not a big deal. Charlie, have the Beatles announced that they were going to release this song way in advance, or was it kind of like a surprise drop thing? It was just like next week, new Beatles song, because that's how kind of I perceived it. It's just like a week in advance type of thing, or was it a while coming?
Yeah, so it was kind of a mixture of both. Yeah, like it was a mixture of both in terms of like Paul McCartney. I think if I remember correctly, it was on like Penn and Teller's podcast, and was like, "Oh yeah, we've got another song coming up." it was one of those things where he just drops like bits of info, like, "Yeah, we're working on we had the stuff from Peter's," so it's like, okay, so he's got Peter Jackson technology, he's somehow using that to fix up the thing, and everyone pretty much guessed it would be the Now and Then demo recording that by that point everyone knew that in the 90s for the anthology sessions George, Paul and Ringo came together using demo tracks given to them by Yoko to, you know, finish off these last few songs, and sadly one of them was a bit degraded. They all were a bit degraded, but one of them was more degraded than the others. The piano was just a little bit too loud over the vocals, so they had to pretty much scratch that. But they had worked on it and recorded elements for it. So everyone just assumed at some point, because they always said they would finish it one day. They're like, oh yeah, we'll finish it one day. And then, yeah, I think it was like 2022 may have been the first time that it was all brought up again, like, oh, Paul's thinking about doing something or along those lines. And I think it's been a bit of a drip fed news item ever since. And then it's pretty much, oh yeah, okay, now.
Here it is. Sure.
Like there's that big statement.
Bam! Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly, yeah.
And what a bam it has been. It feels like Beatlemania. I mean, it what Beatlemania would have been in the social media age to an extent. Nani, I want to hear your thoughts though. Before I tech, because I know you're in school and you're working, so you're a little out of the loop about what's going on with the world at times. So before I texted you about doing this episode and like how and listening to the new Beatles song, were you aware?
I was that there not. Was a new was okay. not. So I'm tell, totally yeah.
So tell me that thought process from when I texted you to today, basically.
Yeah. So I have like no social media presence, so I don't even have X and Instagram or anything. So I'm in law school. I, you know, completely detached from anything happening. And then with the strike, I also had kind of an excuse to even like watch less because we weren't recording. So I didn't have to really pay attention to what was happening in the world. And I remember like that the short film about how everything happened kind of showed up on my feed on Apple TV. And I was like,
what is this?
The last Beatles song. And I kind of just ignored it, thinking it was, you know, kind of just something from an anthology, not that it was like an actual new song. So as soon as Goose texted me. It kind of blew my mind. And I went online. And,
and I probably texted you nonchalantly, like, oh, yeah, let's listen to the song.
We'll like, and it. I was like, wait, a new Beatles song? What? So obviously I went online. I watched the short film first just to see, like, of everything, course. How it, like, came together. And then I looked up the music video already. It already had millions of views. And it was so surreal to... Because, I don't know, I feel like kids these days don't really care about older bands and stuff in general.
They but, do about the Beatles, though. The Beatles. Beatles has a huge, young following on TikTok.
And then I saw the video, and it kind of made me cry, and I was like, damn you, Goose, for making me watch this right now. I was, like, on a weekend that I was supposed to be preparing a presentation for class, and then
whoops.
I went on this rabbit hole of, like, just listening to Beatles song, like, all weekend long, and it's been fantastic, and it really, it sounds so much like the Beatles, what they were able to do with the technology, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. John's voice sounds so clear, and it just made me feel like when I was a kid again, because my parents were big fans of the Beatles, and they would play the vinyls all the time, and mm-hmm. just listening to it again. My mom's in Europe right now, actually, so I don't know if she knows that it's out, so.
I wonder what to know, knowing your mom.
Yeah, probably not, so she's gonna freak out as soon as she comes back, because... and my mom and I usually, I help in Thanksgiving. I don't actually, you know, cook or anything.
You stand.
I stand next to her and drink. And we have always, since I went to college, like 20 years ago, good God, the first time. We would always, our soundtrack to Thanksgiving dinner was always the Beatles. So it's amazing that we get to have a new song.
A new song. Yeah. A new song, basically.
A new song, yeah.
Which it's something that for me was like wild, and I'll get into like how I felt about it now and then. But because the first person that I texted about this new Beatles song when I heard about it was Charlie. Charlie was the first person that I immediately texted was him to kind of like see what he this saw and like what? And scared and like we're talking about it on the podcast. God damn it! So and it was funny because at the time when I was like thinking about this song, a part of my brain kind of deleted like that there were previous new songs from the 90s.
The 95 ones. Yeah.
And Charlie was kind enough to remind me of that, and we were talking about some of that stuff. But in from what I had remembered from when I had, you know, vaguely researched this years ago, was Free as a Bird. That's the only song that I like consciously remember from the Beatles that they had released in the 90s. And full disclosure, when I had listened to it way back in the day, which is probably college, so probably like 15 years ago, holy shit. I remember not digging it so much, but I didn't know that there were three songs. I mean, now and then it's the third one. I only knew about Free as a Bird, and then Charlie was kind enough to remind me that, no, there's other ones, and there's this other one called Real Love, and I'm like, oh, wait, I had no idea about that one. So the cool thing about listening to Now and Then, as been having these conversations, kind of like going back and then revisiting the catalog, and man, when I listen to like Real Love, it's because Charlie said like, oh, that's my, I think it's Real Love, Free as a Bird, and then Now and Then in the ranking of the new songs, I'm like, well, I gotta see for myself. And then I listen to Free as a Bird, and I'm like, okay, still doesn't do it for me. I can appreciate it a lot more than I did back then, because back then probably in that whole prequel cynicism thing where it's just like new that's from everything that was original sucks, and now we're trying to get over that stuff. But Real Love, man, Real Love is a banger. Like I've had that song on repeat all goddamn week, and that song rocks so much, and it's kind of a testament of how timeless the Beatles are, right? It's like music that even from across the grave, right? Because these are scary songs to an extent, especially Now and Then, because
two of them are alive right now.
That's what I was saying on Twitter. I was saying that this is like necromancy. It's like you're like taking the voice of a dead man and like bringing it back to life. Mm-hmm. And then like taking archival guitar parts from another dead man to then make this, you know, a song from two people that maybe should be dead. In this day and age, it's terrifying, but in all the right ways, and Now and Then more so than Real Love, but Real Love has a haunting quality, and I think it's because of how it was recorded in the 90s, because I, from what everything I've been reading up on both sessions, is that they tried to keep it sounding as much as close to 60s as they could. So all the old instruments, all the old recording equipment, everything from like that classic Beatles era. And it really comes through, I think, in that recording in a way that Now and Then doesn't have. And it's something you and I, Charlie, were talking about. Now and Then feels a lot more modern production.
It does.
And we can talk about the merits of either of them. But Real Love has like an ethereal quality of like, you know, this lost Beatles song. And Now and Then has like this contemporary haunting, you know, ghostly fashion to it that I think is really interesting to then see like both of those songs in tandem to each other, because I think they're both very comparable. But before we get into that, Charlie, what was your opinion of Now and Then? Like, did it rock your world? Did it like, you know, make you feel things you haven't felt in a while? What was your reaction? Because I know you're a big Beatles fan as well.
Yeah, look, let's be clear. It's a Beatles song. So the fact that it's been released at all is a miracle. And yeah, I really like it. I really enjoy it. I think out of the three demos, it's definitely the weakest in terms of, you know, lyrically and, you know, all that sort of thing. But yeah, it's just for me, I can't help but just love the fact that we get to hear those four, you know, lads from Liverpool back together in one way or another. And I think that's what's special about the anthology tracks is that. And I think what's hard for me to separate, like you said, it definitely feels more of a modern production.
Yeah.
And there's good and bad reasons for that. Mm. And ironically, one of the good but bad reasons for that is that John's voice sounds very great because of the way that they use the AI system. So the AI tools that were used were the ones created by Peter Jackson, which goes into the audio. So they get the audio recording of the demo track, and then they train the audio, the AI system, to pick out every individual thing. So it teaches it what John's voice sounds like, what John's piano sounds like. It separates those and then like saves them as separate files. So John's voice is very clear. Whereas in the 90s, the way they did it was like different, like obviously not the same.
Yeah.
So the way that the tracks sound in the 90s are obviously different to how they sound now, because it's just a better way of doing it. But I think for songs like I said, I think if I had to rank the demo tracks, it would go to Real Love, Free as a Bird, and then Now and Then. Because Real Love is a very emotional song for me. Like I cry every time I listen to it. It's just one of those like very emotional songs. Because it's just an emblem of what the Beatles are, which is just love and peace. And, you know, it's a beautiful track that's, you know, John Lennon may not be with us, but he's still spouting about love and peace, and that's kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
But like you said, because of the recording techniques and the way that they try to fix it, it's very disjointed, the voice, because it's different. It's in a different place, and it feels very like a ghost in that sense. And I think that actually lends to the recording a little bit more. But it's the way you view it, and I think the way you go to that, like, I'm not going to complain that John's voice sounds very good in Now and Then, because that's ridiculous. But in a sense, you know, it's part of that whole thing. Like, one of the most emotional things, obviously, that whole anthology, you know, the recording sessions must have been so, you know, emotional. I know they said that they had to mentally, in their minds, they had to mentally pretend that John was on holiday. And there's actual footage of them saying stuff like, John, we're going to put the kettle on. Do you want a cup of tea? And it's like, you just got to pretend that he's out the room. And that's very, you know, so sad, but beautiful at the same time. Like,
I know.
And I think, it's all the three tracks have a kind of similar, like, theme to them all. Like, it's a bit, they're like looking back and looking forward, which fit the anthology series really well, actually.
Yeah.
And also fits this sort of last Beatles track very well. Because lyrically, obviously, I think the idea is that the song is obviously about Yoko Ono, and it works in that regard, but it also works in regard for the Beatles. It's like John sort of calling out to his friends and saying, I'm still here and you're still here, and we're not, but we are. And it's like kind of beautiful and sad about that. And everlasting, because that's what it is, really. Like, people want to debate the ethics of it, but for me, it's just a bit like when you save a voice recording of a loved one that's mm-hmm. passed away. It's just the same thing. Like, I know, I think you'd feel a little bit more awkward if they didn't get the backing of the families, and Yoko gave them the tapes.
Yeah.
I know Julian and Sean Lennon were promoting it. So it was Olivia Harrison and Danny Harrison,
mm-hmm.
Who's a big Star Wars fan, by the way.
We'll get to that. Yeah.
I know.
I just think it's really cool to see them all come together and promote that. Because for me, it's just a completion of the work that they did.
Yeah.
I know that people go, oh, technically they didn't work together on that. Well, no, but three of them did. Mm-hmm. And they were working on the blessing of someone else. And John originally did that demo recording. So it's nice to see it complete. And I think, it's a great song. It's a melancholic song.
Mm.
Yeah,
which I think is a good way to sort of end off that journey with. But like you said, there's a bit of everything in there, in all three tracks. There's a little bit of different Beatles era.
Mm-hmm.
This one had the strings. It had, you know, what was a really beautiful touch was the slide guitar that Paul did for George, which was pretty cool.
Which is valid to like say that it was Paul, because I've seen some people be saying like, oh, that's George's slide guitar. It's like, no, that was Paul playing homage,
homage to George.
So let's be clear. I'm sure that if George had done his version of it, it would have been way better.
Yeah, but is that George's guitar? I mean, no doubt, no doubt. It's really just cool to hear them all together, though.
Yeah,
and I think one of the cool things, and you mentioned it, is that Yoko is the one, right, that gave them the record, the tape, for them to be able to do this, because, you know, the common, even to this day, I mean, people are always like, Yoko's the one that broke the Beatles up. And it's kind of, and I'm sure people will still ignore it to keep perpetuating that, but I think it's kind of cathartic to be like, you know, one, she didn't break them up, and two, she's the one that brought them back together.
Yeah.
So it's kind of to kind of like heal that narrative. I feel like a lot of these years have been about healing past narratives of toxicity towards people. It's like Hayden coming back to Ahsoka has been healing that toxicity in the Star Wars fandom. Same with Ahmed Best, and now with Yoko, mm-hmm. it's just like, oh, Yoko didn't break them up. She brought them back to an extent. So I think that's another beautiful kind of aspect to that. But Nani, you were talking about how the music video made you feel, but like, do you feel the song fits well with the, like, now that we've talked about how the production might feel a little more modern, do you still feel like it's ranked solidly as a Beatles song? How does it make you feel?
To me, it does sound like a Beatles song. Obviously, it's a lot clearer than, you know, they usually were. And I do love the, you know, kind of the graininess of the sound of vinyl and all those things. But let's be real, without the technology, they wouldn't have been able to save this song. Like, this song, they weren't able to save it in the 90s. And I think this is the only way that they could have done it. And the Beatles, I feel, were always really, you know, fascinated by recording technology. So it makes sense, I think, for this last one to be a little bit crisper. Like, it's the last one is crisp, it's up to date with like modern technology. So I don't think that goes against, you know, Beatles philosophy. So I don't know. It still very much feels like a Beatles song to me. I would not rank it amongst my favorites, but it's so good to have something new from them again. So, you know, all in all, I think it was a gift to get this.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I do appreciate of this mix being the way it is that I mean, because I do like the mix of, and I'm going to talk specifically about Real Love, because I love that song.
Really love Real Love.
As opposed to, like, Free As a Bird is good, but I don't love it. And one thing that I appreciate this type of mixing versus how they did in the 90s, that, again, you can appreciate, like, all the individual tracks of the song much better and cleaner. Mm-hmm. And in Real Love, obviously, all the other Beatles are doing backing vocals and tracks to, like, to supplement John's. But it feels, it doesn't like come up as much, so you don't really like hear those harmonies over John's as clearly. And in this one, like, I remember one of the things that kind of like almost took kind of my breath away the first time. It's like when you start hearing like Ringo and Paul harmonizing on top of John's. And it's weird because you know, you can hear John's vocals very clearly, but it still very definitely feels like an old recording of John's vocals. So they didn't clean it up so much that it feels like new John recording, right? It still feels like an old John recording. It's cleaned up. But then all of a sudden to hear like old Paul and old Ringo, singing over it was just like, it was like it kind of took my breath away a little bit. And that's something that I really appreciate about like this mix, because like you can hear like that overlay of them over John as it. And again, it's haunting and scary. It's just like, oh my God, you have like the ghost of John Lennon, like interacting with, like
80-year-old versions of Paul and Ringo.
80-year-old Beatles. It was, John should have been an 80-year-old Beatle too. And like, see, like he couldn't do it, but you have his, however old he was, 30 whatever or 40 whatever, with like these 80-year-old, you know, ghosts talking with that old ghost. It's weird. Like, I love the song just on that merit. And then obviously
it's
those
kind of
the strings,
bringing their whole story together, you know, and and adding the strings was a genius idea for them to do as well.
Which the strings too, is something that's really cool. And Charlie, you're probably going to talk more about this, but they have like Giles Martin do it, which is the son of George Martin, the fifth Beatle, right? Because he unfortunately passed away, so he couldn't come back. So again, it's just like layers and layers of, you know, of legacy and memory coming into the song that really amplifies the depth of meaning of it. And to then, again, have the son of the producer that did like all these classic Beatles songs then come back and try to emulate his dad to rousing success, I think, because those strings feel very, very Beatles to me. And in such a way really amplifies the depth and sentimentality of the song in a way that I can't get over it. Like, I don't have a record player. I don't have a record player, and I don't have any vinyl records. However, I bought the vinyl for Now and Then because I was like so enamored with it. And like, well, one, the cover art for the vinyl was beautiful. And then not only that, but I think it was really clever because side A is the single for Now and Then. And then side B is their first single, which I think was Love Me Do, if I'm not mistaken. So it's really...
I didn't know that. That's really
so cool. It's so poetic. Yeah. Excuse me. So poetic to then have like the first single with the last
single. Awful circle. Yeah.
It's like, and it hasn't gotten here. It gets here like a Monday. So like, I'm really looking forward, really looking forward to having that. Because I can't play it because I'm not a record player, but at least I will have the vinyl. Charlie, tell us a little bit more about the strings in that song. We were saying like how it was Giles Martin, George Martin's son, doing it. Do you have a little more background info on that, since you have all the behind the scenes here at Deets for us?
Yeah, I think it was like Abbey Road that did the strings, but they didn't know what it was for. The string players didn't know what it was for. So they were told, I believe they probably thought it was for his new record or something along those lines, new single. It wasn't. It's a Beatles record, which is incredible. Imagine being there now and thinking, oh God, I played the Beatles.
Yeah, could you imagine being like, you think you're doing this random thing and suddenly, oh, I played for the last Beatles song ever. What?
I actually read an article about one of the musicians that was there, and she unfortunately passed away before she was able to find out that it was a Beatles record. And like her mom was, they were interviewing her mom, and her mom was like, oh my gosh, she would have loved it. She would have lost her shit because she was a huge Beatles fan. So she was so happy to do a Paul McCartney song. So if she had been able to live long enough to find out that it was a Beatles song, she would have like flipped her shit. So it's again like that endearing and enduring quality of, you know, of how the longevity and impact that this music has. I had another question for you. Finish that thought, sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, like, because people forget that the Beatles at this stage, it's easy to make, like, you see a lot of people that love to be cool, to be like, oh yeah, the Beatles actually won that again. which whatever like whatever And, you know, there's always the cool people that don't really care for them, or, you know, that was ages ago. No one really cares anymore. But they're so ingrained in culture now that you can escape the fact that they're so ingrained in culture. And it's part of the, it is a part of a story. Like, if you see, like, I was watching an interview with a very great Liverpoolian actor, and they were talking about the fact that, you know, beforehand, they were just seen as lower class, you know, like people, no one understood what you're saying. But because the Beatles shot to stardom, you could go anywhere around the world and people go, oh, Liverpool, the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like just one of those things where it's like a small thing can change so many people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Think about, you know, the amount of weddings and people falling in love to Beatles songs, the amount of people, you know, so much has happened and still happens. There's, you know, we were joking about James Bond a minute ago. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have had a Bond theme like Paul McCartney if it weren't for the fact of the Beatles.
True.
So all these small little things, you know? And it is interesting, you were saying about the whole Yoko stuff. Like, oh yeah, Yoko broke up the Beatles. I find it very funny that, because to me it's a little bit like the finale to Loki. Mm-hmm. You know how Loki keeps going back and tries to change small little bits, but no matter what, it's inevitable for that to happen. For me, that's the same way the Beatles breaking up. They would have broken up regardless. It mm-hmm. wasn't just Yoko. It was so many. It was like George being neglected, but also being very talented and having to go off in his own way. You know, that had to happen, even though it has hearts or soul. And we could have had so many more people. Yeah, we could have done, but we had, you know, George Harrison singles. We had Ringo Starr's Amazing Photograph record single, which I don't know if you've ever heard, but it's amazing. Good. George Harrison's, backing vocals is so good on that. You know, all that stuff is great. And for me, I think the best sign of that is that in the 90s, you know, Free as a Bird didn't get number one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was boycotted by the BBC. That's what I've been reading up.
And it was beaten by, ironically, Michael Jackson, who by this stage had definitely, become a villain in the Beatles saga. He became friendly with Paul McCartney, joked about buying his stuff, and then used the songs for adverts, which they definitely wouldn't have done beforehand. And so there's a sort of a beautiful irony in the fact that Now and Then is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know? It's the first number one since 1969, I think. So it's the longest gap between a band releasing a single. Not only that, it's a sign of the times as well. We were joking about James Bond, but someone put a meme up the other day and said, imagine if you woke up from a coma and you went, what year is it? And it's 2023. Okay, who's number one? It's the Beatles. Okay, who else has got great songs out? The Rolling Stones. What? Okay, what's happening? Oh, yeah, Doctor Who's back on TV soon. It's just ridiculous.
That was in 2023.
Exactly,
yeah.
So for me, it's like, it's just a part of that. It's part of our nation now, the tapestry, which, you know, especially our one, is made up of plenty of bad things, but there's good things too. And I think we're pretty proud to have the Beatles be part of it.
I mean, it's not a bad one to have. I'll say that much. But to that extent with what you were saying, I think that there's a lot of parallels, right, with the Beatles and then Star Wars, because especially with the whole myth of how the Beatles were going to break up and how that was going to be an eventuality, regardless of what you decide to blame, I think that it's very similar to Star Wars in the regard that fans want to have a scapegoat of what to blame or who to point to be able to justify why things didn't go the way that it's going for them.
They wanted. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for the Beatles, it's, you know, for the Beatles, it's Yoko Ono. And for Star Wars right now, it's a pick your villain of the week. It could be Kathy Kennedy. It could be Rian Johnson, or in the early 2000s, George Lucas. And I think that it's very interesting to see like both cultural icons be defined almost to the same extent by the negativity and toxicity of their fans versus the positivity of the body of work, right? Which is kind of the mind-numbing thing about it. It's like, seriously, you're gonna like just focus on that negative piece of it. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Nani, how do you feel about it? Have you ever thought about it in that way? Like how like fandom has such has such ownership and entitlement to it that they feel that they are justified in how they judge something that they might not agree with, in the same way that Beatles fans did the same thing with, Yoko. I think with the Beatles is a far more concentrated regard.
Because it was very concentrated on Yoko.
There's a lot less of the Beatles in that regard to kind of pick and choose the toxic aspects of it. But I think there's a parallel there.
I think there is. And I honestly wouldn't have thought about it until you just brought it up. So good for you for being all deep and stuff. Bam! You know? Good for you trying to tie up the Beatles with Star Wars. Look at that. Look at what you did.
I wouldn't have been able to do that the first year of podcasting. This is 3 years in.
But it is true. And I think we can see it in a lot of media in general, when it's something that people have really strong opinions about, or it's something that's very ingrained into the culture. There's when you have an expectation of what something is supposed to be like for you, because you don't know if other people are actually enjoying it, but yourself become very like ownershipy about it, and you become very jealous of the way that you want it to be. And then by doing that, one, you kind of destroy it for everybody else that does enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you don't necessarily need to love something about everything. I don't love every single Beatles song, just as I don't like every single thing that comes out about Star Wars, but I can still love both for other aspects. Mm-hmm. You know, not everything's going to resonate with everybody all the time. And the blame game is kind of pointless because, one, were you involved in it? Do you know the ins and outs of everything that was happening? How dare you really have an opinion about all the inner workings of something that's creatively, you probably have no idea how it works. And you just, like, blaming somebody doesn't erase that something happened negative that you don't like. So just pointing the finger at somebody does not resolve anything. So I think it's really unfair. A lot of the things that happened to Yoko, to, you know, the Beatles in general, just a lot of the history kind of overlapping the final product, the music that we love, the everything that they gave us. You know, they're people too. They get to make mistakes. It's you can't blame them for not giving us enough Beatles music. Be happy that we have as many as we do.
I mean, it's wild to think about that they released music only for a little over 10 years. That's like insane that all of their body of work was so concentrated. And then those 10 years, they changed so much from like the rockabilly Elvis Presley stuff to, you know, to Abbey Road.
Not only that, their ages. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous, their ages. I think they were like 27 when Abbey Road came out.
That's I don't even want to think about that because it makes me feel as a failure.
I know, right?
Like, okay, well.
Yeah, Beatles were releasing Abbey Road in their 20s. And
I'm podcasting at 35, so, you know.
Same thing.
It's fine.
Okay, well, at least we're healthy, I guess. Charlie, what do you think about that parallel between like the toxicity of like both groups in terms of like how they manifest their dissatisfaction with the media that they love?
You're right. It does tie in, and like you said, it's anything to do with anything that's popular. And it can start off with, you know, sort of not dangerous arguments like, oh, this isn't my favorite because of this, blah blah blah, and it can descend to the extent of conspiracy.
Yeah,
I mean, look at the Paul is dead theory.
I love that though. It's so good. It's so funny.
It's insane. It's insane.
It's great.
And it's stupid,
but I love it so much.
Like people just, like you said, people won't accept that the people we love and the people we look up to are fallible.
Mm-hmm.
And God forbid human, because how dare you ever consider that? So of course you have to come up with a theory that he's not. Paul McCartney doesn't make mistakes. He died in the 60s and was replaced by some other guy.
Billy Shears.
So which is so ridiculous. And yeah, like you were saying, it's a mixture of things. Like with Yoko, of course it's very easy to blame the let's be honest, foreign woman. Then anything else. And the Beatles, you know, have been very open about the fact that their music comes a lot from black music. Mm. Like most of rock and roll, let's be honest, they've just been inspired by black musicians who very much were responsible for the blues. And we wouldn't have the Beatles without black musicians.
Mm.
And they were very open about that. Same with David Bowie, which I also appreciated, that he was very open for those musicians, because some of our artists don't accept that and don't come out up about it. And, you know, it's the same with it. It's very funny for me to have people argue about an Asian woman ruining the Beatles, when at the same time you're listening to music that's firmly inspired by Indian music. And be like, wow, these white guys know what they're doing. Like, I love George Harrison. And absolutely, he was inspired by those musicians and, you know, amplified those voices and those musicians himself. So he's not the issue. It's when people like are so ridiculous in their like nature. And for me, like, it's also, you're also dismissing Yoko's humanity in that regard, because you're saying, oh, well, no, it's because of this. It's like, in with all due respect to Yoko, I think she was a bit annoying. Like, I mean, that's absolutely fine. That's, I mean, if you watch the footage sessions, it's like, okay, you can stop screaming now, you know?
I love that clip from when John Lennon is playing with Chuck Berry, and they just, and the audio guy just like turns off her microphone because he's just like a banshee in the background. He's like, oh.
And it's the way you view things now. Like, I remember when the Get Back documentary came out, and there's a pretty lovely session where Linda McCartney's daughter starts playing with them and starts sort of like mimicking Yoko screaming. And all these people are like, ha, look, see, even she knows that it's stupid and she's making fun of her. And she's not. She's just doing what she was doing. And John Lennon clearly like, look, Yoko, look. And she's like smiling. It's because it's just fun. Like, I think whatever you fall for, like, Yoko and John were clearly an interesting couple because they were both so artistic and a bit out there and a bit. Like, I don't know if I'd like to, like, be, like, best friends with those two. Like, I think they'd be a bit, you know, we've all got friends that are, like,
intense.
Are weird. Yeah. An intense, weird couple.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I love you, but I don't want to stay on holiday with you because I feel like you're...
There's only so much I can take at a time.
Exactly. So that's what I feel about that. And I think, like you said, the same with Star Wars. You know, it's very, like, Star Wars is very much inspired by different cultures.
Yeah.
And to be, just to ignore that aspect is folly. Most myths are inspired by cultures, like history is inspired by cultures and the way we take things on. So, it's just, yeah, it's ridiculous. And again, like you said, the Kathleen Kennedy is a woman in charge. That's why she's an easy target, because, you know, we're not going to see people fight back for her the same way you do against George Lucas. Like, see, George Lucas now is in the 180 because the threat of a bigger evil, a woman with power. Oh, God.
Right?
Could you imagine? Oh, yeah.
It's so terrifying.
It's very terrifying.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And like you said, it's the same with Yoko. Like, she's the one who's responsible for giving us back that voice and providing, you know, and it's the complications. And I feel like you have to look at both sides before you can make a rational argument. If you're going to argue stuff like, well, yeah, but she did break up that marriage. Of course she did. And that's not great. But look at the other Beatles. No, if it, like, I love you, George Harrison's my favorite. He did a lot of Gene.
He got around. That's just
put it that way. He slept with one of the Beatles' wives.
That's what I was alluding to. I was like, well, but he's George Harrison, you know. And same with John Lennon. Like, people kind of forget that he wasn't the best husband, to put it extremely mildly, to his first wife. And
it makes singing getting better very awkward at karaoke.
I love that song, but then when you find out that it's actually kind of autobiographical to an extent, it's like, oh, like, you're kind of,
yeah,
you would have gotten canceled.
You get the part of the song, and you're like, I used to be cruel to my woman.
It's like, maybe apologize to her, like, instead of like putting it for a song for everybody to hear. I mean, and same with Julian, you know, like not the best father, to put it mildly, on that one, and not keeping him in the will and stuff was weird, especially because he was already starting to heal his relationship with him, like, towards the end, before like he got assassinated. So, like, to kind of, and maybe it was an oversight, like, he didn't think about updating the will before he, you know, who can see that they're gonna get shot, you know? So So I don't know if that was a thing. It's like, well, I didn't just get to it because I'm busy with life. And that's why the Will thing didn't get updated. But
I don't know if you've ever watched this, but there's a really beautiful interview with Julian Lennon talking about that situation with Yoko. And it's the most beautiful thing I've ever watched in my life, because and obviously his mum was such a kind soul. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she dealt with that big impact. And, you know, it must have been very embarrassing to come home and see your husband with another woman.
Yeah.
You know, especially like they got together very young and stuff. And, you know, and I'm not judging anyone for everything, but she definitely raised him right, because there's a really beautiful moment where he talks and he says about how he had to forgive Yoko, because the stuff she did with him as well, like not like they sold off all of his stuff and like some of the stuff that was promised to him. And that, you know, I think he's been open in the fact that Julian Lennon's had to buy loads of his stuff at auctions, his dad's stuff at auctions. Spending his own money, like to get stuff like any person should have for their father. Even letters to him. And there's a moment where he says, I just got to the point where I stopped, like, I can't hate this woman anymore. Like, I can't be angry at this woman because he's my brother's mum. And I just see my brother's face, and I'm not going to cause more pain to my brother. So I'm done with it. And I thought, how like selfless do you have to be? Yeah. Like, it's so beautiful and emotional. And I think that's kind of what the point is that with Star Wars, the Beatles, or anything like that, things are complicated and emotions are mixed and things can't get solved in easy manners. And I think that sometimes people get confused by that notion and look for an easy answer where there might not be one.
I mean, it's one of those things too, where it's like hindsight's 2020. It's easy to judge something from the past with clarity when you're seeing it from an outside perspective, and you know, and you see all the context from it. It's easy to say like, "Well, this is the easy solution." But when you're in the moment and you don't have the benefit of foresight, and you're, you know, in it and emotions, and it's tough. It's tough. Like, look, I mean, we have to just look at ourselves, right? We don't make the right decisions all the time. So it's like one of those things, why are we judging someone else for doing the wrong decision at a time too? Not to say that we forgive every wrong decision, because, you know, some of the things that John did were very clearly wrong, regardless of when it was done. And obviously I'm talking about his first marriage. But I think if anything, the Beatles has taught us is to kind of love and be forgiving and to kind of listen to them, and then not have those qualities in our lives is kind of a disservice to them, especially with these kind of last songs that they've given us that talk about those things in a very an unambiguous way. It's just like, just love, man, just love. Because you don't know when you're gonna be a ghost haunting someone's recording in, you know, in a couple decades time.
Especially like Real Love, those lyrics are, I think, sum up the Beatles the most. They're the most beautiful lyrics, I feel like, for me.
God, I love that song. Damn you for reminding me of it.
The one where it's like, thought I'd been in love before, but in my heart I wanted more. Seems like all I really wanted to do was wait for you. It's like, oh.
And
him, like,
and the guitar, and like the George Harrison's guitar. Come on, ah.
The guitar, the vocals, and Free as a Bird. Have you seen the music videos?
It's great. It's great.
Those are very emotional. Very emotional. And I feel like there's so much in there. And I think that's what's great as well, is that all those songs have something that I feel very Beatles-esque and are a nod of the hat in respect.
Mm-hmm.
I think is it Free as a Bird that has the reverse footage at the end?
I don't remember. I just saw them like all this week, but I can't remember. I just know that the Free as a Bird one has one that starts with like all the faces kind of merging into each other, which is like just beautiful. But
the Free as a Bird, the track ends on a reverse vocal cording, which is what John loved. And it's of John playing the banjo, I think, and saying, "How was that?" or something along those lines.
Now I need to listen to it.
Which is great.
I guess my Sunday's gonna continue to be a Beatles black Day. Hole.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a bad thing. It's not. But yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where we could be talking kind of ad nauseum forever because there's so much Beatles stuff and so much lore, I guess we could say, from the Fab Four, that this would be like forever. And unfortunately, we don't have that time. So before we start wrapping up, we gotta keep the thing going with Star Wars a little bit, since we have been known to talk about Star Wars on this podcast. Charlie, closing thoughts a little bit on Ahsoka. We know we weren't able to talk about it while it was happening. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you thought about the show and what you're kind of looking forward to now in the future of a post-WGA SAG-AFTRA-STRIKE Star Wars?
Bit of an exclusive for you here, because this is my my first time saying my thoughts on a podcast about Ahsoka.
Shit, we're going to have to make this its own clip so you can put it on ISP.
Big exclusive. I really liked Ahsoka. It was sort of the Star Wars that I like the most, where it's clearly, it's a little bit different, a little bit out there, but very much the core. Felt very A New Hope to me in certain regards. Very Clone Warsy, naturally.
Yes,
naturally.
Again, there are bits that I think can be improved in future seasons. And I think, obviously, like with COVID and all that stuff, probably hindered that a little bit. And again, it's really stupid stuff. I feel like sometimes when I talk about these issues, it's like, who cares? But it's just for me. Like, I think the lightsabers in some of the Disney Plus shows have been a bit weird, like the way they're done. Because the way that the technology is used now is that they have the actual like light coming out of them. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's not much post-effects work done to that. So it just feels a little more off than even the sequel trilogy movies, which you can tell have had the extra like effects put onto it. So that's the sort of gripes I have. Like
That's a big gripe.
It's a pedantic gripe, but those sort of things, like sometimes the lightsabers look great, sometimes they look a little bit like off to me. But the story, I was happy with the story. I was excited to see where we go with the story. I think it does a really good job at teasing out elements that we can explore in other shows or perhaps a sequel, like a season two. And I like that it surprised me a little bit. Like, I think we all just sort of expected Ahsoka to come back at the end of the series. And it'd be like, well, get the gang out together. We've got to fight Thrawn now. Wacka wacka. and it didn't. It challenged you. It was like, no, actually, this isn't her journey. Like, her journey was brought to that place, but something else needs both Sabine and Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. And fundamentally, the whole point of the season was a story about masters and apprentices and growing and learning and healing, I think. For Ahsoka, she got to heal. I would say personally, it's interesting how people view the Force Ghosts, in my opinion, because it almost feels like people reduce them to this weird ethereal being without any sort of soul still, which I don't think is the case.
Yeah.
I think Obi-Wan clearly has concern for Luke in Empire. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I think Yoda has concern for Luke as a Force Ghost. And just because they're more like ethereal and have like a connection to the Force and can see things differently, I think they still have an emotional bond. So for me, it was very great to see Anakin deal with Ahsoka, and getting to see Hayden deliver a performance that this isn't Anakin 2.0 where he's like, I'm just Anakin again. This is an Anakin that's been Vader.
Yeah.
And you can see the toll it has on him. And you can see that, and I thought it was a really great performance by Hayden, because you can tell like the toll it had on him. And just the small bits, like when he says, oh, I've heard that before. And it's like a clearly nod towards Luke being like, it's still good in you. And it's like, that's the stuff I love. Like, that's the stuff I appreciate. So I liked it. It was a healing experience for Sabine. It was a healing experience for Ahsoka.
Yeah.
And for them to move forward. Now we get, I think what people wanted to see in this first season was like Ahsoka and Sabine, badass together. And I feel like that's not really a story you can just start off with. So I feel like season two would go from there. And, I think there's a lot of intriguing stuff you can go forward with this. And I really liked, Ezra, fantastic casting.
Ezra's my favorite Jedi. Yep.
Like, Ezra's like, if you said to me, what is the ideal Jedi? I would say Ezra Bridger, because he's, to me, he's what I feel like a Jedi should be. You know, like, he doesn't necessarily need a lightsaber. He's very open with life and creatures and treats people with respect. The fact that he had, you know, he was trapped on this world for God knows how long, like 10 years, right? No way back for his... He's lost his family, and now he's lost his other family. He doesn't know if his home planet that he cared so much about was saved or not. And yet he still found the time to integrate himself with a different culture and look after them and, you know, become friends with them. That's such a Jedi concept that really bothers me when you see, like, what should a Jedi be? And it's always a badass warrior. Cool guy with a lightsaber. And I'm like, that's not really what it's about. Like, it's about being like Ezra in terms of, you know, he didn't go straight into warrior mode still. Like, he became a sort of a peaceful guy afterwards. Like, it didn't take long for him to go back into that sort of style. So I really like that. And he's very defensive with his lightsaber technique, I feel like. So yeah, he's what I think people think Cal is sometimes in the games. Like, I haven't played the second game, so no spoilers for that.
That's great. But that's great. So I'm gonna say about it.
I don't think Ezra would, like, yeet a goat off a cliff. That's what I'm saying.
He also doesn't have to obey video game mechanics. So he has that going also for him. True.
Then again, he just double jump.
True. But interesting. Nani,
I was pretty much done. Yeah.
So Nani, now in, like, these closing thoughts of, like, Beatles and Star Wars, obviously and I have talked about Ahsoka. Ad nauseum, basically. So, like, what are now you, like, looking forward to? Since there's no more Beatles songs, I guess we can't look forward to that unless Joko finds another cassette. You never know. Maybe
there is. Oh, I don't know if you've ever heard. Have you had Jod and Paul's last performance together?
I don't think. Well, if you haven't sent it to me, then I probably haven't.
There is a. I think it's like an. I can't remember. It's like an hour long. There is. The last time John and Paul hung out together was, like, in the 80s, I think. Or early 80s or late 70s. And this, everyone in this video is so high off their heads on coke. It's ridiculous. The music is absolutely terrible. Because they're so high. But there is a performance that they do together. I'll send you a link to it. You can listen to it whenever you want. Absolutely interesting.
I can't wait to hear, like, a coke-fueled performance. Nami, what are you looking forward to Star Wars? I know, like, we're not watching Young Jedi Adventures. We're not the target demographic for that. What's the horizon look forward to?
Definitely super excited about the Acolyte. I cannot wait. But other than that, I haven't really looked into what's going to be released anytime soon. So cautiously optimistic about new releases and new stuff being made now post-strike, and hopefully, you know, better written stuff. I'm a huge fan of For All Mankind, and season 4 just came out. I just saw the
Apple TV, right?
Yeah, it's so good, and so I'm really excited to watch the rest of that season. So when The Boys comes out the next season, I'll watch that too. But
I need to watch that. We'll see. I don't know if, like, there's gonna be any schedule shifting for a lot of these, like, Disney Plus shows because of the strikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but we'll see. I'm not sure what's the next thing. I think it's supposed to be Skeleton Crew, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. But anyway. I think that kind of covers it for today. I think this has been, like, a really fun conversation talking about the Beatles and a little bit of Star Wars, you know, keeping it diverse. But before we wrap up, Charlie, where can people find you? I know you're all over the place.
Sadly. You can find me on Twitter or X or whatever it's called, Lex Luthor's platform. you can find me at CMWASHPY, and on there's my link tree where you can find me everywhere else. So, handy little place for you to find me everywhere else.
Perfect. And we'll put a link there in the description so that everyone can definitely check Charlie out. Charlie's a great guy and has very good Twitter/X takes. one of the best people at Twitter that I've ever met. So make sure to follow Charlie, please. And to listen to the Imperial Senate podcast. All three of them are great people that make amazing content. So please make sure to follow them. But yeah, I think with that, I think that covers it for today. For now and then, I guess.
Now and then. So Charlie, thank you so much for joining us. It was such a pleasure to meet you since I didn't get the chance to go to a Star Wars Celebration. So I hope to one day meet you in person.
Yes, and vice versa.
Yes, and it was such a good conversation. We love the Beatles. We love Star Wars. There's so many fandoms out there. You just enjoy what you love and, you know, don't criticize the shit out of it. So just, you know, like, subscribe, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. And until next time, may the Force be with you.